Blog Talk Radio.
You really don't understand, do you? Hey, man, don't you realize in order for us to make this thing work, man, we've got to get rid of the pimps and the pushers and the prostitutes and then start all over again clean.
Hey, look, nobody's pushing me anyway, okay? I mean, not you, not the cops, nobody, man. I mean, you want to get rid of the pushers, I'll help you. But don't send your people after me.
Come on, John. Can't you see that we can't get rid of one without getting rid of the other? We got to come down on both of them at the same time in order for this whole thing to work for the people.
Hey, look, nobody's closing me out of my business.
Welcome to another edition of Making a Connection, where I'll be your host, Soke Hassan Khalid, for the next hour or so, and we welcome you into what we call our family living room here on DocRadio.net. Each and every Friday, I bring you this program in dedication to Supreme Grandmaster Dr. Moses Powell. We call it Making a Connection, which is one of the things that he tried to do. And all of his lifestyle, what he tried to do is make everything connect so it have more meaning. So we wanted to continue that legacy by having this show where each and every Friday we have a martial art intellectual conversation in the sense of how we can make things around us better by identifying the good that exists amongst us. So I welcome you. I see so many people already tuned into this show. This show today we entitled Let's Get Ready to Rumble. And, you know, much like what that expression says, there's something exciting is about to happen. I'm looking for my co-host to get on the line, but until he does, I want to welcome you, as I do each and every Friday, with beginning with our news. But that voice that you heard when we opened up the program was a clip from Supreme Grandmaster Dr. Moses Powell. And what he was saying there is that a lot of people can do a lot of things in life, but it comes down to, can you fight? Our show tonight is dedicated to the fight game, so to speak. We consider the boxing to be a martial art as well, where Supreme Grandmaster Dr. Powell was very very fluent in boxing himself. And our guest had a chance to meet him personally himself. But he himself has a great amount of accomplishments that he's done in a short period of time, and he's still here with us today doing some great things, and he blessed us by being able to consent to the interview that we have going here today. So I'm going to get right to that, but I'm going to open our show as we normally do by going into our news for the calendar month of November and to the end of the year. And this being November, our beloved Khoshi Kai Khan is coming up this next week, November 17th. It's an event that we do each year. We're going on our third year now, where we recognize those people who have done some great things in the martial art and have contributed so much and still are doing that. It's just about recognizing them. We call it warriors, recognizing warriors. And so we don't call it a Hall of Fame because it's not about the fame that you've achieved. It's really about what you are giving back. And we're proud to be able to go on to our third year. Last year we had over 300 people in attendance, and hopefully we have you out there this year. You can go to khoshikaikhan.org on your web browser, and it'll take you right there where you can purchase tickets. We have a seminar that goes on from 12 to 3, a training seminar where no less than 7 masters will be on the floor there to train you, and then a banquet dinner, an 8-course banquet dinner that starts that evening from 6 o'clock. Doors open at 6. The event starts at 7 to 11 o'clock, where we have entertainment, singers there, comedian entertainment, as well as family and friends coming together. So hopefully we'll see you out there. You can reach out to me at 347-723-2308 at any time to be able to purchase tickets or more information. It's going to be at the Sheraton LaGuardia East in Flushing, Queens, New York. Also, on the following day, our good friend Hanshi Rick Diaz will be throwing an event, his tournament, his annual tournament that he'll be doing in Flushing, Queens as well. So you can reach out to us for more information on that. And November 25th will be Grandmaster Saifullah will be doing his event on that date, where you can find out more information from us on docradio.net. That's it for my news. I see my co-host is here on the line. Just want to bring him in so he can say hello to the family. Shion Farouk Gibbs is on the line. Shion, are you there?
Well, it's greetings, Sokey. How are you this evening?
I'm blessed, brother. Thank you for being able to make the call. How was your week, man?
A very long week, Sokey.
Yes, sir. You know, we've all braved the storm Sandy here in New York. We still have some after effects with that, but I think the warrior spirit is getting us all through it. So I see so many people are still on the line and being able to communicate with each other. So I'm glad that you can make it. Did you have any news that you wanted to share with the family before we moved on to our tonight's program?
No news tonight, Sokey, not at all.
Okay. Well, you know, again, we're coming to the close of the year 2012. We had so many great things happening. Just last week, we had the official Board of Elections. Matter of fact, it went in sequence with the national election. So congratulations are in order for our President Obama. For being elected to his second term. So we congratulate him and his cabinet. As well as we had the elections for the family of Sanukis, in which we had some great individuals who stood up to be able to continue this legacy of Supreme Grand Master Dr. Moses Powell. And I happened to be running for position, as well as Grand Master Anthony Muhammad, an outstanding individual. And we still run the organization in the sense of trying to continue the legacy of Supreme Grand Master Dr. Powell and everything that we do. But I was elected to the position of president, so I'm very proud to be able to stand in that position, to be able to bring some more positive things towards the legacy of Supreme Grand Master Dr. Powell. So, you know, stay tuned and watch and be a part of all of the things as part of Sanukis, through the family of Sanukis. So you can reach out to us at docradio.net to find out more information about that or how you can be a part of that. But all our seminars throughout the year will be open, where you can come out and meet and greet the masters and be a part of the growth of the family of Sanukis, along with Grandmaster Dal Sargent, who is also on the Doc Radio Network with us. He was elected as vice president as well, so congratulations are in order for him as well. That's pretty much the news at this point. Gets me ready for our show tonight. And, Sean, we named it Let's Get Ready to Rumble, right?
Yes, sir.
Yes, which sort of speaks to the fight game. And our guest tonight is one affluent person in the fight game, has been and still does continue to do some positive things. We're waiting for him to sort of chime in on the line. But I want to let everybody know that this is not something that we are doing just on the fly like that. These are people who are connected to Dr. Moses Powell, that are connected to what we do, what we do in our lives as far as living as martial artists, and very sincere behind the scenes. You don't get a chance to hear that much about promoters. This is part one of what we intend on having as part two as well, where we get some martial art promoters in here as well. But as I said earlier, we look at our beloved boxing as a martial art as well. And this young man has done so much inside the fight game. As we wait for him to chime into the lines, we want to talk just a little bit about promotion, promoting events, promoting tournaments. There are some people who don't have an admiration for promoters or tournaments and things of that nature, but it does have its place. It allows the world to be able to see and allows competitors to be able to come and bring their talents, so to speak, to the forefront, so we can start to recognize them as such. Long before some of the promoters that we know today, the great ones like the one that's about to come on the call here today, they were not promoters that were promoting people of color. Not to the point where, you know, they were getting the big bucks, so to speak, or they were getting the great fights. So it took somebody to sort of step in the game with that, I care about what's happening to these fighters. And this young man did that. He came out, came out fighting in the sense that he didn't allow others to dictate the way that the fight game should go. You know, and it takes a stand up person sometimes for us to be able to see what we have to do to follow that person. And so this gentleman that we're about to introduce, I see he's on the line now, so I just want to get to the introduction. Started at the age of 16. They nicknamed him real early on as Kid Promoter. He promoted some of the greatest fights that we know today. He has worked with over 50 champions. Over 80-plus world contenders and promoted over 1,000 fights. Some of his fights have been seen on ABC Network, NBC, CBS, USA, HBO, and Showtime channels. Now, it's not too many of us on the line that don't know one, if not all, of those channels. He introduced live boxing to Time Warner, HBO. We know that when we look at boxing and we think of boxing, that is the channel that really much comes across harder than all of the rest. He has numerous fights for over 20 years on all of these channels. He's promoted fights in Atlantic City, on the Boardwalk, the Convention Center, the Meadowlands, Madison Square Garden, Radio City, the Superdome, the Astrodome. I mean, just to name a few. Again, you know, we're very honored to have him come on this show and share some of those experiences with us. You know, some of the big events like the MGA Grant and you know, the amount of people that can fit into these arenas range anywhere from like 15,000 to 20,000 people at Caesar's Palace and places like that. So, you know, just to give you an idea, if you haven't never been to these places where he's promoted these fights at, and so almost any and everybody that looks at the fight game has been able to be a part of his events, even if they don't know his name. But we're here to introduce him today for those people who may not know. One of his fights, listing the highest revenue ever generated for pay-per-view boxing, and that would be the Tyson Riddick fight that was part of Desert Storm 1 and Desert Storm 2, which really produced somewhere in the neighborhood of $117 million in 6 months span of time. You know, this resume goes on and on, so deep and so long for all the accolades that he has done and been a part of in the boxing world. We want to make sure that we don't undermine any of those things. But I just want to introduce, without any further ado, in case you don't know the name, please recognize the name of Brother Murad Muhammad. Brother Muhammad, are you on the line?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now clearly, brother. How are you, sir?
I am very good, my brother. It's an honor and a privilege for you to have me on the radio. I have a new iPad, and I really do not know how to work it. However, I'm doing pretty good, if you can hear me.
Yes, sir, I can hear you very, very clearly. Assalamu alaikum. I just want to greet you and let you know that we are so honored to have you here inside of your busy schedule. Did you get a chance to hear some of the things that I was reading to our listeners?
Yes, you pretty much have me there. I'm one of the youngest promoters in the world. Started out traveling the world with Muhammad Ali.
Yes, sir.
At the age of 16 and went all over the world with him. I was able to see the world for its true self and see boxing on a high level. And it inspired me. It made me understand what the world was all about. Ali was loved around the world, more so outside the country than he was in the country.
Yes,
we couldn't move from the airports to the hotels. It was just impeccable the way they loved him and the way they gravitated to him. I don't care where we went, what country we was in, millions of people would be shouting from the airport all the way to the hotel, Ali, Ali, Ali. It was just unbelievable. And when we participated in the fights in those foreign countries, they came out. You couldn't get in the door. And the TVs was just, the ratings was very high. So when we returned back home, I said, wow, I would like to do this myself. I was in the martial art, and I was taught by the KA system, Kareem Allah at the time, and he changed his name to Kareem Abdullah, which was the right thing to do. However, he was a phenomenal in being a teacher, and he taught us very well. Marlo, Earl, you name it, old KA. When we grew up, we was sensational over in New York till they really banned us for our style of martial art. He had seven systems, the freestyle, the robot style, the standard style, and et cetera. He wrote those systems himself, created them himself, and he didn't want to be a teacher, but when his sensei, Cheatham, died in a plane crash, he felt nobody else could teach him, so he started teaching. And when you say black belts, I mean, all his black belts was outstanding, made front cover of the newspapers. His peewees like Little K.A. and Mr. Wonderful, Robert, they were sensational. His girls were sensational. Usually when you have a sensei, they have maybe one, two outstanding students. It's amazing that the K.A. system, everyone in there could fight. And everyone in there was able to bring back trophies, so many trophies, he had to get a bigger place.
Yes,
however, Muhammad saw me, and I was appointed to go with him. And the Zhang Foley fight was the first fight that I was able to be with Muhammad. And when Dundee and Bundini Brown and Youngblood and Dr. Frey Pacheco, all of them went through but me. When they got to me, they stopped me and said, that's it. Ali can't let any more in. He don't have any more complimentary tickets. And I said, wow, I don't do it. You would thought Angela would have came back for me or Youngblood or any one of the other staff members. It was Ali that came back. And I was shocked that he would recognize old little me, who just was signed to him for the first time. And he said to the guard, he said, he's with me. He said, Ali, you got enough of your complimentary tickets, and he can't come in. He said, okay, it won't be no fighting. He began to walk. I said, okay. So they allowed me in. And from that point on, I realized that Ali loved, I don't care how big or how small, there was no such thing as big eyes and little ewes. That was Muhammad Ali. And,
yes,
of course,
sir,
he won that fight. But that was the beginning of me introduced to the boxing world. And because I was a martial artist, I created the kickboxing. I came up with the six kicks above the waist and 2 minutes around with me and the gentleman from Korea, and we put on what we call, it was the Thrill of Manila, if you recall. It was Ali fighting Joe Frazier, Kareem fighting Jeff Smith, and Larry Holmes fighting Rodney Barrett. And we put it in Atlanta and Maryland, and I had all the closed circuit as well as the drive-in movies with the kickboxing. And I did well. And after it was all over, it was four other men with me, and we all was called the Cornerstone. And we began to count our money, and we made about $50,075. It was a lot of money back then after paying all the expenses. But Don King made a few million. $5 million here, $6 million here. Man, I'm in the wrong sport. I decided no more kickboxing for me.
Yes, sir. Brother Muhammad, you're breaking up a little bit. We're losing you.
They started calling me the greatest young promoter of all times.
Okay.
And so I went on to success in New Jersey. Found a gentleman named James Scott, and James Scott was a inmate in jail for double murder, and I was able to take that prison and resurrect it, and for the first time in the history of the state of New Jersey, had all the institutions in the state of New Jersey. That's unheard of. There's no other institution or corporation or individual ever had exclusivity over top of all of the institutions.
Yes,
and Governor Burns and Farber, who was the superintendent of the institutions, as well as Judy Nile and the Attorney General, they all signed exclusivity. And my dean was what you pay to go to jail. People came from all around the world to pay me to come to jail to watch James Scott fight. And I walked into the Time Warners and sold them on the idea if they would come behind the walls of the worst prison in the state of New Jersey, maximum security, where they were burning down the prison and doing all the despicable things to men trying to tear up the building. And they said, you can take us there? I said, yes, I can take you there. And that's how I began. In HBO, we won Best Program of the Year when Scott beat Eddie the Gregory the Flame, who became our first world champion, Eddie Mustafa Muhammad. And that's how I became a phenomenon in the state of New Jersey. NBC, CBS, HBO, Showtime was bitten on coming behind the walls, and Scott was beating everybody. Anybody that I brought from all parts of the country and the world, he would win, and he was calling me prison promoter. I didn't like that phrase, but then I went to Atlantic City and opened up the Bally's Park Place. That was my first fight, and then I went to the Sands, and then I went to the Brighton, who became the Golden Nugget and the resorts, and I was the king of Atlantic City. And Don King came in, and there was some controversy, and they said Murad Muhammad went to the other side of Atlantic City, and I opened up to Harris. When I brought Larry Holmes, never been done in 60 years, the heavyweight championship fight took place live on NBC in prime time against Scott Frank. And that's when I became a phenomenon in the state of New Jersey. And then I went on to do things for the hospitals and the schools and raise money for the bulletproof vests for the state troopers and money for the officers who died in the line of duty. I raised $30,000, me and Chris Jackman. And I was able to help the Crippled Children's Hospital, the schools in Jersey City, and the hospitals in Jersey City. So my family spent over about $15,000-$20,000 in just contributions in our state. And I decided to leave the state and go elsewhere, and I started traveling, the Madison Square Garden, Cosico Fieldhouse, and all in Texas and California. And then, of course, I went out the country and made my niche in about 7-8 foreign countries, including Puerto Rico. It's my humble opinion about my career. I'll be on the phone maybe from now on to tell you what my ultimate goal has been, and I did just that with over 50 champions and 80 world contenders and known in 200 foreign countries and 6 countries. And then in every newspaper throughout the world. I mean, if you go to any library in any city, any state, you can read about Muhammad because it's all wrote about me. So bad about me, and I called through Muhammad, the manager of Ali. They both was on the phone, and they both said, "Did they spell your name correctly?" I said, "Yes, what did that mean?" They said, "Bad news is better than no news." And I learned my lesson that just right. I don't care as long as you spell my name correctly and right. But I was able to do something impeccable, and that is that the FBI investigated boxing for over 17 years, and a man named Warren Flagg, the top investigator for the FBI, and they got Bob Allen to admit to fraud. Duver admitted to fraud, and Kushner admitted to fraud. King would not take go on the oath, and they found Murad Muhammad as the cleanest promoter in America. And they staffed to prove me, and a lot of my stitches didn't like it at all. But I went on to be known as the cleanest and most honest promoter stamped by the FBI of 17 years. And I hired the man who retired and was decorated by our former President Clinton, Warren Flagg, and he's been on my team for 12 years. As a former FBI agent, and he helped me a great deal where there's a lot of racism around the country and people that didn't want me to do certain things because of my skin. He would step in. And because of who he was and his decoration of his allegiance to America, I was able to get the doors that I normally wouldn't get to. That's my humble opinion.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I believe that, you know, all the acclimates that you've just described, and you know, and you're still doing this, and this is one of the things that we want to get across to the people. A lot of times promoters are not given the recognition unless it's through someone else, or as you said earlier, it's really when your name comes up, it's in a negative light. And so to be recognized as being one of the most honest players, and for you to be out there as long as you have from the age of 16, we're very honored to have you here with us today. So, you know, in regards to all the things that you've read and continue to do in your humanitarian way as well, we thank you and applaud you for that. Thank you.
Well, thank you for that, Gordon. It's okay as long as they talk about me. When I was a kid, I used to sit on the bench and talk about Errol Flynn and Superman and all the things. We used to talk about the things we didn't like about them, and we talked about the things we did like about them, but we was talking about them.
And we never knew
we would ever meet these kind of people. But you see, I used to say to people, if you want to know my history, call CBS, nobody but the presidents. And they all knew me because of my integrity and my honesty and my God consciousness. I never counseled a fight in 40 years of continuity in the boxing world. That's unheard of, and I give that credit to God. But I made millionaires. I got a millionaire club. Larry Holmes, when I took him on, he came to me. I made Larry millions of dollars for each fight, which he's never had. He had millions of dollars for Puni, but all his fights were $750 until he met me. I took Roy Jones Jr. from $3 million to $17 million a fight, and made him the heavyweight champion of the world, that everyone said, there's no way I was going to be able to do that. I took Pacquiao off the floor. Nobody cared about him. Nobody wanted to do any business with him. He was in America for 2 years, and I was told by one of my employees named Samson that I should just go to California, and meet this young man. I did that, and I saw in him. So I signed him for $10,000 when I bought Oscar De La Hoya back out for the first time against my champion, Javier Castillejo, and we stuck in there in California, and we did very well with that fight. But I had a kid that was just on the card, and the semi-event from Africa, Ponis fell out. And Ludabella went around telling everybody that me and Marion was in cahoots and that we picked Pacquiao to be in that fight. So I got a call from HBO and said, what do we have here? I said, the next world champion. I said, well, you say we're going to do it. And I was sitting next to my champion, Smoke Gaynor. He said, let me tell you what that champ going to do to your boxer. He said, first you're going to play with him. Then you're going to beat him up. Then you're going to knock him out in about the fifth or sixth round. I said, we're going to hit him and knock him down. You won't see the punch. I said, then we're going to show him who the boss, and then we're going to knock him out. He said, yeah, right. First round, we broke his nose. The second round, he did go down, but the referee couldn't see the punch. And told him, waved it off until the fighter couldn't get up. He had to start counting. So Smoke turned to me and said, my guy. So I said, you ain't see anything yet. And then we knocked him out in the sixth round and became world champion. That's what made Pacquiao. But what I did is something that most promoters don't know how to do because they're not promoters. Seth Apringham says there's only three promoters. Just think about it. Three. King, Aaron, Moran, that creates. We create our way. We don't play the game of broker. Broker is you get money from the hotel, you get money from the network, and you put it all together, and you tell the fighter what he's going to get, and you go home with yours. But when you are in a slump like they are in now, and you got fighters that can't even get fights, and they're number ones and number twos and number threes, you say, what's going on? And what's going on, there's no promoters there. But one, his name is Bob Arum, but he's in the Mexican business, and he's not in any other business. So King, he's not fully in the boxing game anymore. And I took the opportunity to step away for 5 years. And so boxing went down because the brokers can't create. They don't know how to sell out the arenas. They take championship fights in front of 3,000 seats arena. I can't do that. There's no way that Muhammad will put on a fight, in a title fight, and only draw 3,000 people. I create my way. I make my way. My fighters are only big as we make them. And most fighters can't draw. Boxers, African-American fighters are bastard fighters. They can whoop you any given night, but they can't draw. And that's what happened to Bradley. I predicted that they were going to take the fight from Pacquiao and that Bradley was going to win. And they asked the question. They said, what do you mean? He's going to beat Pacquiao? I said, oh, no, he ain't going to beat Pacquiao, but they're going to take it from him because Pacquiao jumped softly with Ferro. And when he jumped softly with Ferro, then a lot of things happened. Bob Arum don't like the idea that Pacquiao didn't sign. So what he did was he took the fight from him. But now he got Pacquiao back. Who's catching the hell? Bradley. Why? Because he's a bastard. What do you mean by that? He beat Pacquiao, according to the judges, but he can't draw. So that's what's wrong with the African-American fighters. They can't draw. Latino fighters draw. Mexican fighters draw. African-American fighters don't draw. So what King and I did is we took these fighters that was insignificant, magnified to be significant, and sold them to the world. So when I put on my fights, I made sure that 19,000 people chairing in Madison Square Garden and Conseco Fieldhouse in the Max Arena in the Meadowlands, I made sure that we have 15,000, 20,000 people. That's promoting because the fighter can't draw that. You got to know how to create that promotion and create the electricity that the people will come. More important, you got to have ratings. And I was known for good ratings because my thing was real fights. I tell my boxer, you can beat this B-plus fighter if you're in shape. But if you're not, he's going to whoop you. And if you ain't mentally into it, he's going to whoop you. So that's why all my fights was called real fights. I put on real fights. And you just look what's happened to the Olympics. They picked these kids to go over there because the other kids won't sign with them. And those are the ones that really can fight. So when we sent all the guys that were signing with these agents, look what happened. They went over there and lost. Boxing is supposed to be the best man win. Now, you give the edge to your boxer. The ring got to be right. The ropes got to be right. The city got to be right. The gloves got to be all those things you can pick for the edge. But you can't cheat the next man. You got to give the next man the opportunity if you got conscience. You can't cheat that man out of taking care of his family. But you're going to have to win it the hard way. You got to earn it. So when my bell say ring, ding, my kid better be right because that kid's coming there to whoop you. And if he wins, I'm going to give him the decision. So that's the way I governed my game, and that's the way I governed my sport. And I made millionaires. Eddie Mustafa, Saad Muhammad, the right Parley Muhammad. all the Muhammads was my athlete, but they weren't Muhammads when I met them. They
yes,
were
sir.
Franklin and Braxton and Eddie Gregory. But because of they chose to come to the business, and then when I went out and got the Javier Castellanos and the Gomez and the Pedroza and all the Latinos that I was able to take, the Tapias, all these fighters that I took to another height. And that's
yes,
what
sir.
I did in my business. I said, listen, what you did yesterday is yours. I don't want anything of it. But what I do from day on, now I get a piece of it. And if I can create the money, I'm entitled to the money. So I made multi-millionaires. I made Pacquiao a phenomenon. When you talk about Michael Jordan, you got to talk about Barry Gordy. When you talk about Pacquiao, you got to talk about Murad Muhammad. I took him all the way up to the Eric Morales fight. And then we separated on reasons. And then Bob Arum inherited. And he went on to do what he's doing today. But nobody cared. No one thought my kid. They didn't think that Arthur Williams was going to become world champion.
Right.
They said I was out of my mind. And I told him, you listen, we make you world champion. And we made him world champion. And that's what I did for my living. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed giving to the boxing world. I taught them more than what my competitors wanted me to teach them. And I said to you, just listen to this formula. The Muhammad Ali law came to shut King and I down. But I was the Muhammad Ali law before the law came in existence. If you say to a fighter that never made $100 or $100,000 in his life, and you take him to a fight, and you pay him $50,000, he fights for the world title and wins. The man won. He ain't had no money, don't know what money is all about. And you say to that kid, all right, you're gonna defend your title. How much you want? The kid might say, give me $100,000, because to him, $100,000 is a lot of money. So most promoters, like my competitors, would say, okay, you got $100, but the kid didn't know you got $1 million for the fight. So my difference was, I said, now before you make that decision, I got $1 million. And you know I got to promote this fight, and I got to make money. Now how much money you want?
Mm-hmm.
And a kid, if he's fair, he might say, all right, give me $400 or give me $500. He would never ask for just $100 because he knows what's there. And then you make your deal. Now, some fighters was in greats, won it all, and never made $1 million in their whole life, so you got to sit there for 2 days and negotiate with them. But that's the life we chose. But the point was that you be transparent to the fighter to educate him so he will grow up and understand that what his promoter goes home with and what he goes home with. Well, they ain't doing that today. Pacquiao, you don't find now, is one of the most largest rip-off athletes that ever lived. That kid goes home with 20% of his money. 20%. It's unbelievable, unheard of, and nobody's talking about it because it ain't King and ain't Murad Muhammad's doing it. It's those who got the power to do whatever they want to do in the sport of boxing. But I say to them, they know I talk like this, God don't like ugly. You may not get you now. It's called temporary heaven for permanent hell. When the hell drops on you, for what you have done to these athletes that's grown up in this country is going to shock a whole lot of them. And that's how God gets you. He don't get you when you're down and out. He gets you when you're riding high. And then you get chastised for all the things you have done wrong. So, yes, negativity, nobody kicks a dead horse. So if you're alive, they're going to kick you. And that comes with the territory. But just look at my track record. My track record now, I ain't saying I'm perfect, because none of us was created to be perfect. However, as long as you're good, I'll weigh your bed. And I would match my history against anybody's history when it comes to integrity and honesty and God consciousness. That's my humble opinion.
Yes, sir, and rightfully so. You know, as you said before, educating those that are around you and allowing them to be able to exercise their God-given right to be able to choose, and hopefully that they'll choose well, because right up to Judgment Day, it is about what you choose and what you choose to do with this one life that you have. And I believe that you're a great testament for a lot of people just outside of the fight game. Just your morality and your integrity stands strong and proud. As we say, not bad from a kid from Jersey City, right? And that is where you're from, is that correct?
Soki, his line just dropped. So, Soki, his line just dropped. So, we'll give him a few minutes to dial back in.
Okay. Well, you know, and I see we have some callers on the line as well. So, we'll wait for him to call back in and to get there. And I'm quite sure everybody has really been educated just by him being able to review his legacy thus far. Shion, what's your take on the brother? As he comes back, I'll let you have a quick question for him.
I'm sitting here and I'm extremely impressed just by the words and the education that he has just given all of us.
I see he's back on the line. I'm just going to key him back in. Okay. Brother Muhammad, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Again, I got this new iPod.
Yes, sir.
And if you make a mistake and hit just the face the wrong way, it wasn't your fault, it was my fault, and I lost you. But continue, I can hear you well.
Okay, great. Yeah, and you're coming through a lot clearer as well for us now, too. We're just commenting basically again on your integrity and how you stand up for the right thing and all that you do. And I was making comment, said it's not bad for my kid from Jersey City. That is where you're from, is that correct?
No, born and raised in Newark, New Jersey, went to State
Jersey
High School, born in the project with one parent and four siblings. And I've been an entrepreneur all my life. I never had a job. I used to wake up in the morning. My mother used to get me up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I used to go out and deliver my papers at the age of 8, 9 years old. And I would come home, and I used to make $10. That was a lot of money. And I had all the prizes, all Seth Wharton. I even went on Spruce Street and was doing the papers. I even had the Even News. I've always made money, and I would bring it home to my mother. There was a commercial out when we was young. A kid would come home and say, look, Ma, no cavities. Well, my mother couldn't send me to the dentist for me to do that, but I used to come home and say, look, Ma, I got $10. It's yours. And she would give me 50 cents to go skating, 50 cents to buy the skates, and 50 cents to buy some candy. I never came back home and said, where's my change? And what is mine? And then I used to shovel snow. And when I used to shovel snow, I used to make $20. I used to run home. The guy said, where are you going, man? I said, I'm going home to see my mother. And I would run up those 8 flights of stairs and run in the door and say, look, Ma, look what I got. She said, what's that? Where do you get that $20 for? I said, I earned it. It's yours. And I would give her the whole $20. And my mother's 94 years old, and she's my best friend. And she taught me how to be honest and go and work for what you want and stop asking people to do for what you can do for yourself. Had an older brother, and he had a red wagon. I loved that red wagon. But he used to let me borrow it, and I used to go to the park and put soda bottles in it. You get 2 cents for the little bottles and a nickel for the big bottles. And I used to fill that wagon up with a bunch of bottles. And the man behind the counter was so angry, the Caucasian guy said, don't bring me no more of these dirty bottles. I went into Sears, and Sears was built in the project down the street by the skating rink, and I went in there, and I think the wrench cost about $3. That was a lot of money. So I had to make $3, and I would turn the fire hydrant on because I wasn't taking all those bottles up to the 8th floor and waste all that water cleaning out the bottles and bring it into the store. I guess the guy didn't like that I was bringing 20 and 30 bottles in there to get paid. So
yes,
that's
sir.
What I did all my life. And then I was taught to get married. Marriage is the foundation of success in life. So at the age of 16, I met a young lady, and she thought because the way I carried myself, I owned my own restaurant on Bergen and Hawthorne called The Feast from the East. I was 16 years old. So she assumed that I was older than what I was, and she was a school teacher. She would have got brought up on charges with child molesting because when she found out how old I was, she said, you got to be at least 25, but you look much younger. I said, no. She said, well, you got to be at least 22. I said, no. And she raised up and said, well, 20? I said, no. 19? No. When she found out I was 16, she cried and said, oh, my God, I'm in love with a baby. But I asked my mother to marry us, and he agreed. because my mother was my friend, and anything I wanted, she'd trust me. And so I married her, and it was the best thing ever, ever I ever done. And
yes,
she taught me how to be a man. She taught me what's the reason why the woman is such a great asset to you. And so I went on and opened up another restaurant and another restaurant, and then I had trucks on the road, and I brought my first one-family house at the age of 17, never been inside, walked in the real estate office, Howard Perella, and I said, listen, I see a house here in Hillside. He said, man, Hillside is all white folks. I said, I don't care who lives there. I like the house. He said, but you got to go in there and see it. I said, no, I don't need to go and see anything. I will look through the window. I like it. So he gave me this guy named James, and James said, wait a minute, you got to be 26. The war is going on, and they're drafting people. I said, that's your problem. Here's $20,000. I want to buy that house. And at that time, that house cost about $89,000. $20,000 was a big, hefty sum of money to put down. I said, that's your job. Well, I know it. I was owning the house. When I brought my wife to the house, she said, well, did you see the house? I said, no, we're going to see it together. When we walked in, she said, oh, my God, I love this house. I said, yours. She said, how the house? I said, I brought it 2 weeks ago. She used to come and bring all kinds of gifts. Son, could I meet your parents? They thought my parents owned the house. And that's how I began. And anyone knows me will tell you, you know, I retired my wife from school, and she used to went back to school for her master's, and I gave her minks and diamonds, and we drove Cadillacs and Lincolns and Cougars, and you know, I had 3 cars parked in my lot. And that's the way I grew up. I never, ever had a job. I always was an entrepreneur and always wanted to do for myself so nobody could tell me what to do. And I realized I had money, you know, making $6,000-$7,000 a week, but my friends didn't have it. And I knew then that I had to do something larger to be able to help more people. And traveling with Muhammad, I realized I can do this. I can go in the boxing business. So I didn't go in the boxing business to say, oh, look at me. Look how big I am. I went in the boxing business to give the fighters alternative to King and Aaron, who was dictating to them. And, you know, they were saying they was robbing them. King got more of the punishment of robbing fighters than Bob Arum. But if you check Arum's record, man, Aaron did make Don King look like he's standing still. And one is Manny Pacquiao. When someone really look into that and find out how that kid's been robbed for so much money to be able to gross 50, 60 million and go home with only 4 or 5 million is a sin. But they ain't going to talk about that. They talk about what Marab Muhammad has done, and then they find out that I didn't do that, and they won't go back and change it. But that's okay. I'm glad to be there. I'm from the project, and whoever thought that I would become an icon, whoever thought I would have people asking for autographs, men and women and children all over the country around the world, I have to give the credit to God. I know it's not me, because when I get big-headed and think it's me, I wouldn't have nothing else. But I give the credit to God, and I try to instill in the children today that we is written in our mother's womb for us to be successful. You just got to believe it. Faith, what is faith? When you give up all the knowledge that you have attained, all the knowledge, not some, and then put your faith in God, who is the creator of all knowledge. They say, well, I want a doctor. I've seen doctors on Skid Row. Some women pick men with muscles. I see men with muscles don't know they're a man or a woman. So it has nothing to do with muscles. It has nothing to do with your degrees. Surely it helps. But if you ain't got common sense, simple common sense, I say to the Muslims, believe in Allah and believing that Muhammad is the seal of the prophet, believing in praying 5 times a day, giving charity, and fasting during the holy month of Ramadan and making pilgrimages, that's your 5 pillars of Islam. What is your 5 senses? Smell, hear, taste, see. No, man, 5 senses, yes, it complements it, but your 5 senses is a gift that God gives every human being, and all knowledge is based on your five senses. Can let nobody take your five senses away from you. So without the education, you wonder why some people become phenomenals because of their five senses. And their five senses is a gift. And when you recognize it as being a gift, and you recognize anything you do good is already written to be successful, because yes, God is with good. Now, you chose to do wrong. Yes, you could be like Nicky Barnes, had 11 years of heaven. How about Frank Lucas, 11 years of heaven? But those dope dealers right now, check and see what they're doing. They're catching holy hell called permanent, temporary heaven for permanent hell. But when you choose righteousness, you can't go wrong. But you can't step out of it now, because there's two worlds. There's the world that God created, and there's the world that he created for Satan. Yes, he creates world for Satan. So I didn't play that games, brother. I didn't drink. I didn't smoke. I don't do dope. I don't snort coke. I don't play their freak games. I kept to myself, and I had my wife with me wherever I went. So when you saw Murad Muhammad, you always saw his wife. I don't care where I was. So you can't send me strange women. I didn't play strange women. I stayed in righteousness. As long as I stay in righteousness, I was going to be successful. Other than that, I couldn't have beat King and Aaron now. These men 25 years older than me. These men been out there 20 years before I came. But the reason I was able to be their competitor, because I did things that they didn't think of doing. So when the Luda Bellas and the Gary Shores and the Art Palulos and the Joe Gardens, what are they doing now? See, it's easy when the going is great, but what can you do when the going is not great? That's what separates the men from the boys. And so when Bob Arum took that fighter away from Gary Shore, it wasn't that Arum did the wrong thing. Arum just said, how much you going to give the young man? Well, I'm going to give him $2 million. Arum said, I'm going to give him $5 million. Mm-hmm. Now, what do you expect that kid to do? Tell Gary Shore that I'm going to stick with you because you've been with me all my life? Or go get that $5 million that will make him escalate to another $5 or $10 million? That's the game. Yes, I mean, you lose some, you win some. But money on the wood makes the betting go good. So the fighters didn't come to me and gravitated to me because they liked me. They gravitated to me because I escalated them to another level of financial independence. And when you could tell people around this world, Murad Muhammad does not want anything what you have done yesterday, including Michael Jordan. Yes, I helped build Jordan Brand. They had me in Nikes, and they said, well, what could you do? I said, I could make you richer. Well, those $3.5 billion Nikes made, that's their prerogative. But when it comes to Murad Muhammad, if you want to escalate it, then give me a call, and they did. And that's how I met Michael Jordan, and we launched Jordan Brand. And Jordan Brand is a multi-million-dollar brand today because of my ingenuity ability to create more money for Michael Jordan. That's why the Jordans love me, the Magic Johnsons love me, the Bob Igers, the CEO of Walt Disney, like me, Jerry Jones, who sent the private jet to pick me up in Teterboro Airport, and the only one on the plane is me and Bill Parcells, who's my friend today. Why would Jerry Jones send for this little black man from Newark? Because of my creativity, my ability. Steve Wynn, Donald Trump, Wally Barr, I escalate their revenue to a higher revenue. And then I went where no man would ever go, Mississippi. They told me I was crazy. Mississippi, they slayed us, they hung us, they castrated us, they raped our mothers, killed our brothers. But we went to Mississippi to prove it's a new day. And when we went there to Mississippi, I shocked the whole entire boxing world. I escalated Mississippi into the millions. And so that's why you saw my name on every billboard around the Gulf. When you go in the hotels, you see my picture up there with the Beatles and Barry White and Bill Cosby and the Temptations and Smokey Robinson. And they ask the question, what is his picture doing there? They say, "Who, Mariah Muhammad, who brings us millions?" That's my credibility, brother. And one thing, you, I don't care what the negativity or whoever, they can't take my history away. That's my history. And my history is the will of God. So I decide to come back and help community and unite Muslims with Christians and Christians with Muslims and Jews with Christians and Muslims to let them all know that we are the children of Adam, whether we like it or not. And they say it in their scripture. They say the children should return back to their father. But the preacher got it wrong. They thought the father was God. God is not our father. God is our creator. Well, who is our father? Adam. But in Islam, we say that the children should return back to their fitra. Well, what is that fitra? The original nature. Well, what is your original nature? Adam. So before we became African-Americans, before we became Italians and Irishmen, before we became all these different countries that we name ourselves after, what was we during the time that Adam and Eve was created? Who was they? Was they African-Americans, Italians, or Irishmen? Was they Jews or Christians? Who were they? They was upright human beings. And so when you learn that we are upright human beings, then now you can run a country like Obama. Obama was born in the womb of a white woman. They was looking in the wrong womb for this black man. And then when he grew up, he went to Indonesia to ask his mother, well, why is he here? But God removed her. So she couldn't teach him how to be white. And then he went to Kenya to look for his daddy to say, why did I came into this world? Am I a black man? But his daddy was no longer there. So he wasn't white, nor is he black. Who is he? A human being. So the first time as a human being in America running this country, the biggest, largest country in the world. What makes our country so powerful? Our guns, our Marines, our Navy, our Army. What makes our country so powerful? If you go to Israel and you try to kill all the Jews, you may do so. And if you go to to the Islamic world, and you go to Saudi Arabia, you want to kill all the Muslims, you may do so. And if you go to Rome and you want to kill all the Christians, you may do so. But if you come to America and you try to bomb America, you kill Jews, Christians, Muslims, you name them, everybody in all walks of life is in this country. That's what God wants. That's what makes this country so powerful. It's powerful because everybody in the world lives in this country. So therefore, God will save and look out for a country that allow the world to come in and benefit. You can grow in this country. You can be everything you want to be in this country. You can. It's called the land of opportunity. So Obama proved that he's the will of God because there ain't no reason, no other reason he can get in his office the second time, or less the first time, without the will of God. So you had the African Americans, you had the Asians, you had the Latinos, you had women, you had Caucasians voting for this man. It's time now for racism now, brother. Racism is dead, and no longer can you be for one side of a race of the people and be a leader of this country. And that's what's been proven. So I see that as being the will of God, and I see that my traveling and my upbringing and my creativity and my knowledge only happen because God will it. So, yes, I give myself my accolades. I'm my number one fan. I believe I'm the greatest young promoter of all times. I believe that I can do whatever I will to do, long as it's right. Right for who? Right for just me? No, right to help others to help themselves. So all those men that came into my bosom, I created them to become out of the poverty stricken of their mind and their way of living and escalated them to another level of financial independence. Last but not least, that we think that religion and economics should be separate. I said, no, I learned that that cannot happen. God wanted us to be economically independent along with religion. Why? Because those who are in religion is grieving because they can't take care of their family. Those in religion is grieving because they can't send their children to school. Those in religion is praying, but they don't see no results. And those who in economics, oh, man, they're getting high, they're freaking, they buying 10 and 20 automobiles, they got 10 different houses around the country, and they have not done nothing for the inner city. So that tells me that if you are separated from economics and you are separated from religion, you're not making it in this world. So religion and economics complement one another. And I learned that early. So as much as I'm religious, as much as I study every day and read the Quran and try to stay on this path of the Musta King, I went to the world and learned that God created this whole creation. This whole creation for us. He don't need nothing from the creation. So you're supposed to engage into his creation, and his creation should engage into us. So I heard a brother say, man, we're materialistic. You damn right. You came from the earth, which is material. We was created materialistic. I heard another brother say he sat in a Lamborghini, and, man, he felt like he was in seventh heaven. That's your nature. Telling you that we are entitled to anything that man creates, because God gave us the power to create, whether it's land, homes, automobiles, or the nice things in the world. Man, there's planes in the air for the will of God. There's boats sailing on the seven seas because the will of God. There's trains on the track moving because the will of God. There's automobiles being created on the road for the will of God. How is it that we believe in God's creation, but yet we don't want none of his creation? So somebody done tricked us and told us that we're supposed to be broke. Well, I ain't going for it. I ain't accepting. I don't bend my back for no man. Nobody, no man can dictate to me and tell me how I should guide my life. I don't bend my back for them. I bend my back for God. Only one bosses me is God. Only one controls me is God. Not no individual, man. You can't dictate to me. There's no dictation in the will of God. The human being doesn't want to be dictated, nor he wants to be in control of everything. That's Satan. That's why Satan don't like us, because we are the crown of creation, the best community. The Ascalon community, they could underground. They make all kinds of roads and bridges for their ass to travel. The Beatles, they've got a community. The Beaver got a community. They make dams. The birds make air-conditioned homes. Why are we the best community? Because we can stand upright. They cannot. So we're better than the ants and the birds and the bees who have a community, the animals who got a community. Even the dog have a community. But we as human beings is the best community. So my job is to bring our Christian brothers, our Jewish brothers, and all men of the cloth together as one, because we all got something in common. We broke. In order for us to be successful, in order for us to get what belongs to us, is to come together as a community to build for our children, to be able to get a good education, to be able to stand on our shoulders and take over the world that God created us to be the crown of this world. We're a little bit above the angels.
Yes,
the angels got a job. They only do the will of God. But you and I got a responsibility. We have a job. We have to make a choice. Either serve God or don't serve him. And that's my whole
thank you,
opinion.
Brother. Thank you for that reminder, because what we have to do is always recognize that. And a great, that's great points that you brought out of the non-separation of those two, because it is about the unity of those things that God has given us to be able to benefit from. You know, the one thing that we have above every animal created on this planet is the will to exercise the difference between right and wrong. So we definitely thank you for bringing that to light. What I want to do now at this point is just take a quick break, and we have like almost 12 people on the line that maybe want to just reach out and give you the salams and say hello to you. Is that okay with you?
I'll be honored to do so.
Great, sir. So we're just going to take like just a two-minute break here and give you a chance to refresh yourself, and then we're just going to come right back and come back with our callers. Again, our number is 646-716-6825. Our special guest today is Brother Moral Muhammad, and he's been such a great honorable guest for us today, enlightening us with so much of his lifestyle, and what he continues to do to this day is share with his brother all of his knowledge. So again, you can call in at that number. We'll be right back from the break. Thank you again, brother. Yes, hello, greetings. 646-716-6825. If you're just tuning in, our show Making the Connection this Friday, we have on our show our special guest, Brother Moral Muhammad, one of the greatest promoters of all time, and not just in boxing, has done so much for the world through his humanitarian efforts as well. Again, often referred to as Kid Promoter, started his career at the age of 16 and has accomplished so much and continues to do so. We have him on the line today, and we have some callers on the line that perhaps want to just reach out and maybe ask some questions. Shion, are you on the line? Shion Farooq?
Oh, it's greetings, Soki. Yes, I'm still here.
Yes, Brother Muhammad, we still have him on the line, so
yes.
Maybe if you can just bring through the callers and let's see what we have on the line.
Yes, we're going to start with our first caller. Area code 610, last four digits 0520. Welcome to Making a Connection. You have a question or comment?
Hey, this is Hashi Saleem. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, sir, I can hear you, brother. Thank you for the call. Brother Muhammad's on the line. Do you have a question or comment?
Just a comment. I just want to thank the brother for appearing on the show. And this is Saleem from Larry Holmes. Every time I listen to this brother, I'm inspired. There hasn't been one time he opened his mouth that I didn't learn something. So I just want to thank him for his imparting knowledge on us and his inspiration. And I'll sign off.
Okay. Again, Brother Muhammad, are you still on the line with us?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay.
Yeah, that was Brother Salim al-Rashid just reaching out and giving you the salams from his end up there in Pennsylvania.
Well, thank you, because I just left Pennsylvania with Larry Holmes' birthday. I have a love for Larry because he and I started together. I used to dry the dishes. He used to wash them. And if he had asked me to wash them, I would have washed them. He was dry. He was the fighter. And no one believed in Larry Holmes but me. All through his whole career, I used to win money. I wasn't a betting man, but it was easy for me because they used to bet against him. And so I would say, all right, I'll take all your bets. Larry's going to win. He would win. Hey, Larry's going to win. He's going to win. So we won all those fights. And one day Larry Holmes was not fighting, and he had a bad arm and he had a bad thumb, and he wanted to get operation. But Ron Lau had shot his trainer on New Year's Eve, and the fight was off for the world title. They had no one to go to. So Larry got a call 2 weeks prior to the fight, and I asked him, why did he take that fight on short notice? He said, man, I wasn't thinking. He said, if they'd have gave me time to think, I might not would have took it. But he took the fight and went against Kenny Norton. It was a tough fight. He had no sparring because he had no money for sparring partners. His car was run down. He just took the opportunity, and he won. Mm-hmm. And no one knows he holds the title for 7.5 years. Mm-hmm. 7.5 years he reigned. And I used to brag about it. And then Larry Holmes came to me. That's a long story. And then when he came to me, I took him to the IBF. And that's what put the IBF on the map, because they didn't have no heavyweight champion. And they was one of the sanctioned by the WBA. The WBC was number one. WBA was number two. And the IBF just was holding on. They were just existing. But when I brought Larry Holmes to the IBF, it put him on the map. And that's when we came into New Jersey and fought Scott and Frank on NBC primetime. It hasn't been primetime TV since Larry Holmes. And we won that. And then I fought Marvis Frazier. I made Marvis rich, gave him $1 million to fight Larry Holmes. And we won that fight. And then I went into Reno, Nevada, and I had Larry Holmes against Michael Spinks. Check the record. Michael Spinks was supposed to fight Larry. But I didn't trust my brother, Butch Lewis. So I put Marvis Frazier against another opponent on the semi-event. That's what I do. I take out insurance. I pay fighters money to get in shape. I say, I'll give you $25,000 to train. And I would pay them $25,000 to train. And then I would either put them on the card for a few more dollars, or I would pay them $200,000 to fight my fighter. In case the opponent fall out, I knew I had some insurance. So that's why I never had a fight canceled. However, NBC called me and said, Butch Lewis pulled out 2 weeks before the fight. I said, good. We got a guy that's on the card to fight Marvin. I said, who? I said, Carl the Truth Williams. They said, we'll take it. So Carl the Truth Williams fought Larry. It was a war for 15 rounds, and Larry won on a split decision. So Larry Holmes and I have been friends for years. I brought him millions of dollars. I was with him when he shouldn't have fought Spinks. I begged him not to fight Spinks, but that's another story. He has his own choice. But I love that man because this guy got off the campus against Ronaldo Snipes, got off the campus against the Acorn, Ernie Chavis. This man was in trouble in the ninth round with Trevor Burbick, and he came back and whooped him. And Timmy Witherspoon had him hurt, damn near out in the 10th round, and he came back and beat Timmy Witherspoon. So Larry Holmes' history is impeccable in his performance in the ring. And so when he called me during all this bad weather, he said, man, you don't never miss my birthday. If you love me, man, you come up here and get away from that hell and be with me. So I had to do it, and I went up there and he's 63 years old now, and and he's still strong. He got his beautiful wife over 35 years. That was the greatest asset for Larry. Larry mm-hmm. had no scandals in his private life. He has mm-hmm. a wife that loves him. He loves her, and that's why he is successful financially. So
yes,
I thank the brother from that part of the world giving me a shout-out.
Yes, most definitely, sir. We have some more callers. I know they're anxious to come on in here. See if we could bring some more in here while we have a little bit more time on the show. Sean, you want to bring in the next caller?
Yes, we're going to try area code 347, last four digits 7055. Welcome to Making a Connection. You have a question or a comment? 7055. You have a question or a comment?
This is True Jones. How you doing? Okay, and Sean. And it's been a pleasure listening to Brother Muhammad. In my circle, they will say in church, I'm a Christian, we'll say in church, he was preaching good. You know, he was, well, you know, so it's been a pleasure listening in. I have no real question at this time. I'm just enjoying it.
Okay, thank you for calling in. Thank you for your comment.
Okay. You know, I like that because what people misconstrue, the Muslims respect all the scripture.
Yes, sir.
The scripture that's written by the will of God was the Torah and the Injil, the Bible, the gospel. We love it. And in order you to know the Quran, you have to read the Bible. The Bible gives you direction. God didn't create the Quran to clear up everything. Just some of the things that people have said about God that the Quran clears. But the gospel is the Bible that's more closer to Islam than anything. I like to use two scenarios. When Muhammad the prophet flew from Mecca to save his life, it was the Christians that took him in Medina. And when the enemy came there, the pagans, and wanted his life, the king said, tell me one reason I should turn him over. He said, well, he believes in one God, and there's many gods. And the Christian told him, said, I too believe in one God. And that became his best friend for 10 years. He was in Medina with his Christian brother. And then the king asked them not to leave to build a masjid on his land. And Muhammad the prophet felt he shouldn't do that because maybe some of his followers will come over to him. So he turned that down and went back to Mecca and began to fight a war that he won. However, during the time of the war, his nephew came to him and said, we need to get the children and women out of here. He said, well, take them across the Red Sea to Ethiopia and see the king over there and tell him I sent you. When he went over there, that was a Christian. And the Christian took him in and the children and the women and the children that flew from Mecca. And when the enemy came over there and asked for them, the king said, well, what reason should I give you? He said, they slayed us. They hurt our children and our women in war. So he said, well, let me hear their side. And the nephew said to him, said, yes, when we was ignorant and without knowledge, yes, we did those things. But one amongst us named Muhammad the prophet, who is my uncle, raised up and taught us to do better. And today we love all humanity. And we're not the people we was yesterday. The king said, that's enough for me. And he protected them. So how could we be against Christians? We cannot be against Christians. Christians are our friends. Christians are our mothers, our fathers, our uncles. And so therefore, I want to kill this myth that Islam don't like Christianity. In order for you to get to Islam, you had to come through Christianity. The Bible was here for the Quran was. The Quran just cleared up some of the words, not all of the words, some of the words, because even in the Quran, it said, Christianity and Judaism did more good than bad. So it meant God is saying that it was more good in religion that was given to mankind from man that was motivated by the will of God. And that's my humble opinion. So I thank that, brother.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you. But you guys, like I said, we want to try to get more calls in. We have a next caller, for a while. 7345, area code 352. You're on the air with Mega Connection. You have a question or comment? Okay, I guess we have a listener there. Again, we just want to try to get as many as possible. Some people have been holding on for a while. Just want to give them a chance to reach out and say hello. Next area code 405, last four digits of your number, 7759. You are the air with Making the Connection. You have a question or comment? 7759. Okay, we have a listener there. See if we can get one more in here as we still have a little bit more time left to the show. Last four digits of your number, 3113, area code 806. You're on the air with Making a Connection. Do you have a question or comment for Brother Muhammad?
It's okay. Shihan, Grandmaster Logan, how you guys doing?
Great. How are you, sir?
Well, pretty good. I was just in amazement listening to Brother Muhammad's testimony. And I knew him, you know, because I'm a fight advocate all my life. I remember the Larry Holmes fights. I have all of those on VHS, the Larry Holmes and Muhammad Ali and, you know, the Sugar Rays and Greg Page and just them all. And I remember him accompanying many of those champions to the ring. But I really remember from the Ali, you know, from him entering the ring with Ali all the time. And yes, there's not much that I can say. You said it all, but I just want to say that he's truly a living legend, no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And, you know, I didn't know he come from such humble means, but, again, he is truly a living legend and an innovator and definitely a motivator. He woke the dead,
yes, sir.
with his testimony. But I was just listening in, and just a great, great show, and I have much, much respect for the brother.
Thank you. Brother, he's on the line. You can just greet him directly. He can hear you.
Yeah, Brother Muhammad, you are truly an inspiration for all.
Well, I thank you for those accolades. Those are the kind of accolades you can take to your grave. You can't take your fame, your money, and all the things you've done for your immediate families. What have you done for society? I learned that at an early age, that to give, I used to ride my automobile because I've been studying scripture ever since I was 13 years old. My grandma was a Jew, and she believed in the Torah. My grandpa grew up on the Indian reservation, and that's where my father came from, and he grew up to be a preacher, so I learned the Torah and the Bible. And then when I was 13 years old, I picked up the Holy Quran. So I thought I was all confused, and I found out that this was my destiny. I needed to learn scripture to understand people and to understand what society is all about. So therefore, I want to let the listening audience to understand that I've been a righteous man for years. I've been praying five times a day for over 40-something years, never missed a prayer, and not that I was taught to do just that. It just came natural to me, as you can get up in the morning and run the park, or you can get up in the morning and do your exercise. I get up in the morning and I make my intentions to God himself. When I learned that God says you take a step and he'll take two, and God says you have to give all that in you before he takes two, because he created us to be the best of anything that we want to do that is good. So I learned that and stood that. So when people said after my fight, and I used to spend $40,000 giving parties, you never saw me in those parties. Then they asked you, where is he? You say, he upstairs. What am I doing up there? So I ain't just studying. I've been studying on the road, because Muhammad Ali used to stay up at 2 o'clock in the morning and read the Bible. And he knew all the stories in the Bible. We wasn't reading the Quran in the 60s. We was reading the Bible. We knew about the Quran, but we put it on a high shelf. So we used to read the Bible, and we used to quote from the Bible. So Jesus says, do not touch me, because I will offend you.
And Mary said, no man has ever touched me. And that's what Virgin Mary said. And Muhammad the Prophet said that Allah says, do not touch the Quran unless your heart is pure. So that word touch must be very significant. And what's significant about touching someone in the streets, the boys in the streets say, give me some love. Because when you hug your brother, it's better than a handshake. When you show love to your neighbor, it's better than just saying hello. So love is a gift that God puts in the hearts of man and woman. Now, surely we love our wife and we have sex with our wife, but when you love a community, that's greater than sex, greater than ego, and greater than money. When you can give back. So I'm riding my car, and I kept saying, to give is better than to have. I said, well, I give all the time. Nobody gives to me. And I was fighting with that, and then it dawned on me. To give is to have it. To receive is not to have it. So it's good to give. That means you got it. To receive means you don't have it. I don't want to be in a position to have my hand out. So I enjoy giving. And my wife used to say, you gave so much money. I said, yes, darling, but it will come back to us. It will come back to you 100-fold. And damn if it didn't do that. Everything I wanted, first I had to struggle to get it. Because God says, first come difficulties, then comes ease. If it's too easy, get the hell out of there. Run. It's easy to do wrong. It's easy to play the game of chance. It's easy to sex women. I taught my sons, they all married, all eight of them, all of them been through college. I taught them, choose your wife from the neck up, not from the navel down. Don't choose them because they look pretty or they're gorgeous. Don't choose a wife because it's the greatest thing you ever saw. Get into her mind. Find out, do she want the same things out of life that you want? Does she believe in God like you believe in God? Does she have care in her heart, generosity in her heart? If she got all those attributes, then you can deal with the navel on down once you marry her. Marry her and give her some dignity. Just don't run through her. And watch your life soar, because you will do the right thing by the sake of God. I heard Muhammad Ali tell Pimp, he said, would you do that in front of your mother? And he said, no, I wouldn't do this in front of my mother. He said, then why would you do it in front of God? Well, that goes to Scripture. Scripture says, serve God as if you can see him, but know that you can't see him, he can see you. So when I do things, I do it for the sake of God. So when I fly in on a helicopter and land on the roof and go down to my suite, and I've been in the best suites in the world, I've been escorted by caravans and saluted by officers of law for my outstanding achievement. So when they come into my suite, all of a sudden their dress drops. All of a sudden they don't have no underwears on. But you can't do wrong if your wife is there. I have to tell the young lady, my wife is in that room there, put your clothes back on. So they try all kinds of tricks. They send you all kinds of favors and gifts and things to make you weak, to fall victim. But something about that Miraj Muhammad they couldn't get. And all I can say to them that 5 a.m. I'm making prayer. 12 o'clock, I'm making prayer. 3 o'clock, I'm making prayer. 5 o'clock in the evening, I'm making prayer. 7 o'clock in the evening, I'm making prayer. And before I go to bed, I make prayer. So why do I pray? Is it just a ritual? No. I'm giving thanks to the Lord that has blessed me and to be able to walk through this earth. And Satan can't touch me because I'm in paradise. He's not allowed in paradise in this world. And he's not allowed in paradise in the hereafter. But if I step outside this world, and I play this game in cheating fighters, and I play this game in taking fights from them, and I play this game in having sex with this woman and sex with that woman,
And I play this game that a little wine can't hurt you, and a little coke can't bother you, and a little dope cannot upset you. I didn't play that game. Those games I didn't play. I would not have been successful in a world that they say cannot be done unless you play their game. I didn't play their game. I stayed on the path of righteousness. I recognized that what I do in the dark will be seen in the light of the final day of judgment. But if you judge days by the day of judgment, every day is a judgment day. But there's a final day of judgment. When you come out of the womb of your mother, there's an angel on the left and an angel on the right, and that goes to you all the way to your grave. And that angel on the right tells you in your ear, don't do that. Somebody told me not to do it, but you do it anyway. And if you continue to do it, then that angel shuts down, like the boys in the streets, the Bloods and the Crips. When you fire that gun, you don't want to do it because the trigger is very difficult to pull. But you pull that trigger, and you kill that human being, and you run home, and you're sweating, and you're in the corner, and you're thinking of what you have done. Then the second time you pull the trigger, it's a little easier. Then you run home, and you sweat, but you don't get in the corner. And then the third time you pull the trigger, now you can go eat and not think about it. Why? Because the angel on the right done shut down. You done lost your common sense. You done lost your moral decency. You done lost your God consciousness. But what that young man don't know, there's an angel on the left. He don't say anything. He writes your history. He writes everything you do in the dark. So when you think you committing adultery in the dark, it's already been written. The angel is writing it. When you abuse that female, it's written. When you shoot that individual, it's written. When you think you got away from the authorities, you didn't get away from the angel that's on your shoulder. And so on the day of judgment, the final day, your portfolio is read. You can't say a word. The scripture says your lips are sealed. So who's telling on you? Your hands, your feet, your eyes, your flesh is telling everything that you have done wrong. And now you're going to pay. It's called hell. And the hellfire is greater than anything you can ever imagine. But if you do good in this world, and you come in front of your Lord, and that angel is now talking about all the good because of your portfolio. Now you say, what is a portfolio? It's your jacket. When that judge reads that you robbed this lady, and you raped that one, and you stole from that one, they sentence you more years than the average guy because why? Your record is dirty. Or the same way in the day of judgment. But no one teaches our youth that they are being recorded. And it's going to come back because you don't die. Your body, the flesh, goes to the grave in which it comes from because it came from the earth. But your nature doesn't die. It evolves, meaning that's a loan that God gives you. And you got to pay that debt up. And what is the debt? Because God needs nothing from you. You got to pay up with your good deeds. What have you done, doctor, with that knowledge? Engineer, with that knowledge? All the knowledge that you obtained in the world, Reverend, Imam, Rabbi, all the knowledge you obtained, you didn't create it. You discovered it. It was here before you got there. So you got to give credit to God for any good that he gives us. Now, we have to be balanced. I'm balanced. I still work on that gin. You know, I say, you say the wrong thing to me, you got a verbal fight. And if you attack me, then I'm able to use the things that I was taught how to give pain. I'm a professional. I know how to hurt with one finger. I know how to take you out with one finger. I know how to end your life. So when you become a master in martial art, you become humble. And you don't want to hurt nobody. So you bow out gracefully. Well, that's the way knowledge is. When you get knowledge, you don't beat up on people. You try to teach them gently. If they don't want to learn, then you go elsewhere. But you don't take what God gives you and abuse the world. You don't beat on the woman that's the greatest creation that ever been. The woman has been created for man, and man was created for the woman. Well, Adam and Eve came out of one mold. Wasn't no two molds. So it was male and female. So the female is the greatest asset. When you realize she's an asset, you understand that Adam, Noah, Jesus, Abraham, Moses, Muhammad, Dr. King, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, Marfa Garvey, all of the great men that came into the world, including you and I, had to come out of the womb of the female. The female is the greatest gift God has
to mankind.
Because man can't walk this earth unless it comes out of her womb. Now, if it didn't come out of her womb, then he's a monster, an animal, a bird, or any kind of insect, but it ain't a human being unless it comes to the womb of that female. Now, Mary's mother and father thought that they made a mistake to create Mary, but Jesus had to come out of the womb of a female in order to produce Jesus. Mm-hmm. And if you shoot that life germ into your wife, 1 million sperm shoots towards her ovary, but one gets in. Mm-hmm. And when that one gets in, out of blood and semen and water, God creates it in 7 days where it's going to live. And when he chose it to live, it's a X chromosome. And that egg shoots up through and around back down to the womb and is now a living creature. But it's an X chromosome. Now it takes 27 days to sit there to find out whether it's going to be a male or a female. And in that time, God says, let it be man. But what was created before the Y? X. So once again, God is saying, in order for you to exist, man, I got to first create woman. And so here you come out of the womb of that female, which is a gift to the world. And every human being got the same ingredients. Can nobody tell you that Bill Gates got more ingredients than I have? The difference is that they learned that nature and went out and created. So God says, you're supposed to come back, Muhammad, and give your knowledge to people that don't understand how to be independent and don't understand how to travel the world. Don't give me a donation and a contribution. Teach me how to build a chip, Bill Gates, Steve Jobs. If you teach the individual who got the same ingredients you have, he or she too will be able to escalate to another level. So
yes,
I'm saying that all of us don't get there because we procrastinate, we don't believe, we believe that we should stay in poverty. So we're complacent in life. Well, I ain't complacent. I believe I got a lot more to do. I said I want to be a millionaire. I did that. Now I want to be a billionaire, and they just wrote on the Google that I gross over $1 billion. I want $1 trillion. And I have to believe that I can make $1 trillion, but not just for me to say, hey, look at me, what am I going to do with $1 trillion? But I can create schools, and I can pay our teachers $150,000 a year with benefits. And if you bring me more of your expertise than any other teacher, I'll pay you $250,000. Oh, they'll be lined up. They would quit the other school systems and come to our system that we will create that our children shouldn't have to pay to go to school. Knowledge is free. Why are we charging them? Because we don't create the finance to be able to send our children to school for free so they too can put chips up to the moon and planes in the skies and cars on the ground and trains on the tracks. They can create ships sailing the seven seas. Yes, who say we can't do these things? So I believe we can. And my children said, well, Dad, you ain't going to be able to do all that in your lifetime. I said, you ain't God. You can't predict what the next second is going to be. So don't ever tell me what God would not will. Surely I didn't believe that I was going to be famous and that people would call me like yourself. But I humble myself because my mama don't ever let me forget, boy, you from the projects. And we had nothing. We ate cereal
with a spoon so we can pass the milk to the next person. I used to knock on doors and ask, could Butch come out? I knew Butch was eating because he had two parents. And I had to go there to his house knowing that he was eating and maybe they would invite me. And she says, okay, are you hungry? Yes, okay. And I sit down, pass the bread, pass the rolls, pass the things I didn't have in my house. From Monday to Tuesday to Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And then my mother used to cook on Sunday like it was Thanksgiving every Sunday. I love her.
Yes, sir.
I love her because I knew her struggle. And she introduced me how to love that female that will die for her babies. And that's my humble opinion.
Well, you know, we thank you so much for your humble beginnings and the acknowledgement of understanding that on a daily basis and living it out each day as a creator has allowed you to be able to do and make the correct choice. So I have to say that I'm humbled by just the experience of being on the phone with you and sharing this with you. It's so much that I'm quite sure some of our listeners, too, believe in the same concepts in life, but it's so refreshing to hear somebody with your degree and your the accolades that you have achieved to be able to bring this to light to us all. It was one of the things that you said at the beginning of your comments, what you were making, you were talking about the touch. Supreme Grand Master Dr. Moses Powell, who this radio station is dedicated to, as well as this channel, has taught so many martial artists, and he was a very good friend of our Mawasas, Kareem Abdullah, as well. And so many people, he's touched so many people in the martial art, and I know that you perhaps across your path as well. But one of the things that he would say, and it just came to mind when you spoke about the touch, he said, if I touch you, I have you. And, you know, we as martial artists, when we say touch, you know, a lot of times people interpret that as being the throw, the punch, or the kick. You know, to say, well, you know, if I touch you now, I got control of you. But, you know, it was a lot deeper than that. He was a very spiritual man himself. And what he meant by that is pretty much what you had described there when you talked about the touch. I wouldn't have, like, maybe 10 more minutes to the show, but I was just wondering if you can make comment on that. Did you ever get a chance to meet Dr. Moses Powell and hear about his teachings? And maybe you could speak on that as well.
Yes, I knew Moses Powell personally. Lord John was his best fighter. In the cage system, used to fight Lord John. You know, Kareem Abdullah had a little fault, and I used to say it was his arrogance. But all of us got fault. But he was a master in teaching you that anything you can do. I remember when Mawa used to throw me around on the dojo floor, and Mawa was the black belt. I was only a green belt. And my sensei stopped me one day going out, and he said, why do you do that? I thought you said you don't fear nothing but God. I said, that's your number one student. He said, I want you to fight. You fight like you believe that you can fight. So me and Mawa got on the floor, and once again, he threw me around. He couldn't beat me unless he grabbed me. And so sensei said, I'm going to take that belt. That touched me. That touched my heart, my sensitivity, and everything he had put in me. And we got down. So when Marlon went to grab me again, I grabbed him in the groin. And he would holler, back up. Sensei would bring us together. We would fight. I beat him that night. When I beat him that night, I knew I would catch hell in the back when we changed. And he came back there and said, the great Rashid! The great Rashid! My name was Rashid at the time. And that put me over the hump, just that alone, and Marlo giving me my accolades. And so when I couldn't go to Kareem gym anymore, and I cried in my heart because I had a love for Kareem as a teacher. I mean, he was just unbelievable and moving, motivating men and women and youngsters. What made his dojo so successful? So I went to James Fane, and Sensei James Fane put me on his one black belt, because in Kareem school, he taught that no
brown belt can beat anyone in his green belt, and no black belt can beat anyone in his brown belt. So I fought his black belt, and he hit me with a crushing heel kick. I didn't know it was a crushing heel. And he kind of froze my left shoulder, and Sensei saw that. So he stopped the fight. So he came to me, he said, you know, you good. And he said, but I'm going to teach you how to use the crushing heel kick without going up in the air. He showed me how to whip it to the left side, the right side, and bring it back through the middle, and it crushes everything in the middle. So I learned that real well. So I came into the dojo of another sensei, Abraham, and Abraham was teaching the class. So when he was teaching the class, we was a little different. You told us to throw a couple of first punches. We would throw them, but we would holler at the end. And after we give that ki, he was ignoring. I mean, he was just a little upset about I was disturbing the whole school, but that's the way I was taught. So he put me on this black belt. He said, on the floor. I said, well, I'm going to fight. He said, you're going to fight my second in command. So all of a sudden, that black belt just went out of, just raced from my mind. And I took him out in 3 seconds. And I pinned him to the floor and stepped in his chest and walked away like we taught in the martial art of little K.A. So then he said, okay, the next week he put me on his number one sensei, and he had a black belt. And that was Wazir. And we fought. And I went up the air for a jump back kick, and he stepped in my back. And I hit the floor face forward, bounced back up with a crescent kick upside his head. Boom! And he stopped it, because he knew we in there to kill one another. So he couldn't allow that to happen. But when you get a martial artist, he want to get you back. So we used to put on demonstrations, and he used to say, now, I'm going to let these two fight, but I can't let them fight too long because they're going to kill each other. And that was the crowd. The crowd used to holler. So one day he said, on the floor, and he threw a circle because I had the freestyle. And he said, who am I going to fight now? He said, me. And so we got down. And so when we got down the first period, no one got a point in, and Haziz was the referee, so he bowed us in again. And when he bowed in this time, I did the crushing heel, shot it, faked him out, came down the middle, and stepped him to his chest, pinned him to the ground, and walked away from him. And he said, you just earned your black belt. I beat another sensei for the first time, and that's how I got my black belt. Everyone thought I got my black belt from Kareem. But he said to me, he said, my God, you remind me of Kareem when he was in Cheatham. So I took my martial art serious. And when Muhammad Ali fell on that stage in the hole, I weighed 160 pounds. I straddled the hole and grabbed Ali on the armpit and caught him. Bandidi went down, broke his leg. That should have been Ali. It wouldn't have been no fight. I'm the one who brought Ali out of Yankee Stadium. He said, can we make him, Muhammad? I said, we can make him. He said, let's go. Nobody else. And I took him through that whole crowd, knocking chairs down and stopping them before they got to us because it was a riot over there. So the martial arts humbled me and put me in a position to protect people's life. So Moses is telling you the right thing. I always wanted to be a jujitsu because I love Moses, who can stand on one finger and weigh 300 pounds. It was unbelievable. But I couldn't have the opportunity because I was traveling with Ali, or I would have taken a jujitsu with Moses Powell, one of the greatest jujitsu you ever can find in New York. So I have a love for him. May God be pleased with him and grant him paradise, and separate his faults from his goodness as I'll separate the east from the west and grant him the hereafter. Because he was a very dynamic, good man that meant when you touch a person's heart, you now feel that person, you feel that love comes through your sensei, through your teacher, through your wife, through your mother. Those are the things that inspire the human being to want to do better, not complacent. You never come complacent in martial art. You never come complacent in education. And we understand that history is reward of all research. Yesterday is not better than today. And God says, live from the present to the future all the way to your grave.
Yes, sir.
That's my humble opinion. I hope I explained what touching a man or a woman means.
Yes, sir, and we appreciate that so much of you bringing that forward, because we wanted to make everyone to understand that that expression went a lot more than just the physical touch, and that and how much it is for us to reach out and touch each other on a, on our basis of being able to, as you said earlier, have knowledge and to be able to extend it. That is the giving. That is how you get, because you have the ability to actually give what you have. And I can personally tell you that what you shared with us here today will live with me for the rest of my days. And I don't think of this as being a coincidental call. Before we get too much further into the call again, I just want to, again, give you my thanks for being on the show and being able to allow us to be able to be enlightened by your humble beginnings and to understand that much that we want to achieve in life is accomplishable once we understand about the highest source that we've been able to relate our skills to. So I definitely want to thank Sister James for allowing us to be able to get this interview. She set it up for us as well. And also for you taking the time out. This has been a two-hour call, and it's been so enlightening, and to our callers calling in as well. So many people are listening online. This show is actually an internet radio show where people around the world can listen to it and play it back. So if they got a chance to miss it, if they missed it, then they'll get a chance later on to come back and archive it. We also have an event coming up this November 17th. Before we lose any more time, I just wanted to make sure that you know that if you decide to come out to that, you'll be my special guest to that. There's something that we do each year is where we recognize those people that have done so many great deeds around the world. We have some people that have done some missionary work inside of different countries. There's martial artists going out there, people who have helped through this storm, Katrina, this past storm, Sandy, being able to extend their homes and their knowledge and how to rebuild and open their hearts to humanity. Because when things like that come around, again, we know that that's our opportunity to be able to show that we care on all levels. And to come out of those categories that people all too often want to put us into. So I think that this call has been real enlightening, sir, because, you know, for those people who thought of you as just a promoter, for those people who thought of you as just being somebody that touched one part of people's lives or just associate with different people on one level, thank you for clearing it up for them that the Brother Murad Muhammad is a human being who cares about other human beings, and that you humble yourself to the Creator above. So may Allah continue to bless you in all you do, brother.
Oh, man.
I appreciate you.
Oh, man. That's so wonderful, brother. I shall return. I shall return, because this is what it's all about. I remember Aaron Banks honored me there in Atlantic City, gave me a trophy about 4.5 feet tall. It was unbelievable for being in the martial arts. And I said to them, I owe it to Kareem Abdullah, because he inspired me and he motivated me when I was a youngster. And I will never forget him for that, why I tried to take him everywhere I went, because he's a sensational photographer. But those accolades, I appreciate, my brother. And anytime you need me, I will try to make it there. Medina James is a young lady that came into my life, and we do a show together called Words of Wisdom.
We do a
TV show. She's from CNN. She's been with CNN for years, and she specializes in interviews and public relations, but she also is a writer. Her degree is in writing. She writes very well, and she's writing for the Muslim Journal. Her first article will come out. If you contact her, she will make sure that if I'm free on the 17th, I will be there, if God willing, inshallah, and I will come down there because you invite me. When I,
so cool.
I don't seek the post. They say the one who seeks the post shouldn't get it, so I don't ask. But when people call me, I come. I feel humble enough to say that I'm going to be there. You know, just recently I was coming out of the mall. I was going down the escalator, and this little person kept saying, Mr. Muhammad. And I turned around, and she couldn't have been no more than 7 years old, and she was a Caucasian little girl. And I said, yes, may I help you? She said, can I have your autograph? And so I said, okay. I gave her my autograph, and she ran. So I went to look around the escalator, and I couldn't see no adult or where she had went. So the person with me said, what do you think about that? I said, that's God sending an angel, because he could have sent a African-American. He could have sent an adult. But he sent a little innocent child without any sin to say, keep doing what you're doing. So
yes,
that's how God talks to us. He says that if I had sent man, the angel, he would have been confused. But I sent men to men in order to enlighten them what they're doing. Should they keep doing it, or what they're doing wrong, they should stop doing it. If you don't see the signs of God, you will not make it in this world. So I thank you for those accolades, and I thank you for humbly allowing me to speak on your radio show. And so if you need me, brother, call me, and if I'm free, I shall be there. So I'm saying to you, I shall return. I shall return.
Yes, Aki. Thank you so much. This has definitely been one of the highlights for me for the year and beyond. So we thank you. As we end this program, for those who have been listening, didn't come in at the first program, beginning of the program, this is our brother, our beloved brother, Muhammad, and just, you know, I just can't say enough about you, brother. I look forward to the day that I can meet and shake your hand and greet you. And the humble
I'll be happy to do that. I just want to say one more thing before we leave the air.
Yes, sir.
I want to say to all of them that if I said anything that was wrong, then I apologize. If I split any verbs, I'm human. But if I say anything to touch your heart, to give you the motivation, the determination to want more out of life, and give that credit to God. I can't take credit for that. I'm only a servant. And if he blesses me to say the right things, I always say, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, with God's name, the merciful benefactor, the merciful redeemer. I say it before I speak. I don't have to say it loud. God is close to us, and I juggle vain. He hears our thoughts before we even think it. So if we say it where God can hear it, then he will govern your tongue. So I just wanted to say that to the listening audience and thank them for spending time for 2 hours or more to hear me to just give them back what God has given me.
Yes, sir. Well, that being said, we've run out of time. We thank you so much, my brother, and we hope and pray that everything continues to go well for you as well. And so with that being said, until the next time, family, may your good be better, and may your better be blessed. Thank you, my brother.
Thank you. May God be with you.
You really don't understand, do you? Hey, man, don't you realize in order for us to make this thing work, man, we've got to get rid of the pimps and the pushers and the prostitutes and then start all over again clean.
Hey, look, nobody's pushing me anyway, okay? I mean, not you, not the cops, nobody, man. I mean, you want to get rid of the pushers, I'll help you. But don't send your people after me.
Come on, John. Can't you see that we can't get rid of one without getting rid of the other? We got to come down on both of them at the same time in order for this whole thing to work for the people.
Hey, look, nobody's closing me out of my business.
Thank you. popping no pills.